Welcome back to Fitz Nation, everybody. Happy to have you along for the ride. Brendan Fitzgerald here. If you're new to the show, welcome. If you're not new to the show, welcome back. Long-form interviews with UFC fighters, coaches, people from the MMA space and in the UFC world. And we get the perspective of how they get better in life and how they have achieved the things that they've achieved. Today's guest is Brian Battle. He was on The Ultimate Fighter when it returned after a couple of years off last season. And if you remember, Brian Battle was, I believe, the second to last pick overall out of the 185-pounders. But he was the last pick for his team, Team Volkanovski. And he went on to win the darn show. Couple of victories. He finished Andre Petrosky, who is now also in the UFC, who was the first overall pick. He was the favorite college wrestler, guy out of the Philly area. But Brian Battle finished him, and then in the final, beat Gilbert Urbina. Now, some will say there's an asterisk to that victory on The Ultimate Fighter because Trayshawn Gore was supposed to be his opponent, but he got injured and that fight couldn't happen. Fear not, Brian Battle and Trayshawn Gore are coming up on February 5th. So the unofficial final of the middleweight tournament of that season of The Ultimate Fighter is coming. I appreciate everybody here who's listening. If you subscribe to the show, if you like the show, if you drop a review of the show wherever you listen in audio form. A reminder, you can find this show on YouTube as well. Just search for my name, Brendan Fitzgerald. Search for Fitz Nation. You'll find this interview and a whole lot more clips. All sorts of fun stuff on my YouTube channel. But let's get to the interview with Brian Battle, where he details his very unique upbringing in the North Carolina area, homeschooled all the way through the end of high school, found mixed martial arts and started training MMA not until he was in his early 20s. And several years later, he's got a wife, he's got a new son, new baby, and he's in the UFC. And his second UFC appearance is coming up. Here's Brian Battle on Fitz Nation. All right, here we go. We got Brian Battle on the show. You know him as the winner of The Ultimate Fighter. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm happy to have another day. You know, get a little working, get a little bit better. Talk to my man over here. You know, it's a good day.
Thanks, brother. You know, I know you connected a lot with Ricky Tercios on the show. And I got to tell you, I had Ricky Tercios here on the podcast, and me and him, we're like boys now after our chat. So I'm excited to talk with you, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, you know, Ricky's so charismatic. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I had that kind of effect on people that he does. So I'm really hoping that we're like that. But I know probably everyone who talks to Ricky feels like they're like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Ricky,
yeah.
Or we called him the cult leader in the house. You know what
I'm
saying?
There you go, man. Yeah. So here's the deal, Brian. I talk to fighters about their lives and their careers. And a lot of fighters, you can get a lot on the internet, but you don't really post on social media, do you?
I mean, I do. I post on social media, just, you know, training pics and stuff like that.
Right, not right.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I mean, like, why is that? Because I know you joined Twitter kind of late, right? And you were like, oh, man. And you know, that's Twitter is where fight business happens and, you know, all this other sort of stuff. Kind of, what has your discovery of it been now that you're like in the UFC and part of the world?
Man, Twitter's interesting because I'm really not a big social media guy. Like, if I wasn't fighting, I probably wouldn't be on it hardly at all.
Yeah.
But Twitter, Twitter's fun, man. Twitter's wild. Like, you know, because people, they don't really, like, that's the place for opinions. You know what I'm saying? Like, you put, if you want retweets and stuff, you have to put, like, a strong opinion that people can, like, comment on and stuff like that. And, like, it's pretty anonymous. So, like, some of those people get pretty wild on Twitter. No, Twitter's
sure
a lot
do.
Of fun.
And you say it's fun, though. For some other people, it's not very fun because people can be so anonymously, I don't know, hateful, hurtful.
Man, but I was like, I mean, but that's part of the fun about it. Like, you know, sometimes I'll read a comment. I'm like, wow, man, how did you get so bent out of shape that, you know, a comment, a random something like messed you up enough in your day that you had to like pause and say this much. So I'm just kind of, viewing it, because I don't know any of these people, so I can't really get my feelings hurt by people I don't really know. You know what I'm saying? It's not a public opinion and stuff, but no, I think Twitter is a lot of fun, man.
I want to get to your time on The Ultimate Fighter and dive into your career, but I first want to know who you are a little bit more. Like, were you always from Charlotte, born, raised, all that stuff? How did you find your way there?
I'm actually from Maryland. I spent like the first 11 years of my life in Maryland. And my family actually moved to North Carolina because we had five cousins in the foster system. And my mom didn't want to see them get split up. So Maryland, and I had four sisters that lived with us. So Maryland didn't feel comfortable with like 10 kids being in one house, especially five foster kids. So we had to move to North Carolina. North Carolina let us do that. So that's how we ended up in North Carolina.
Wow. So you're one of five children.
I have five sisters. Yes, sir. Four of them grew up with me.
Wow. So you're one of six kids, five sisters, and you grew up with five foster cousins.
Yeah. Well, that they live with us for about a year. And then one of them, we burnt our house down. So after that, we were temporarily homeless. So they got put back in the system and things just didn't work out after that. But yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's kind of profound.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no one got hurt. That's like the biggest thing about that. I mean, it's one of those things where we moved around a lot growing up. So none of me and my sisters were really attached to any like possessions or anything like that. So since no one really got hurt, you know, I mean, it was a bummer because it was like a cool house, but you know, you move on, you know, nothing really. Like after we got out, you know, got another house, it wasn't really something you had to dwell on too much.
How old were you when that happened?
12.
12 years old. What was it like growing up the way that you grew up?
It was interesting, man. I like now looking back, it definitely gave me a different outlook and perspective on life. Cause you know, I was homeschooled too. So I had a lot of time to myself to kind of, you know, not deal with like times where other kids would be dealing with peer pressure and whatever. Like I was just kind of in my own head, just like kind of, you know, drifting off into space or whatnot. So it definitely helped me kind of like turn into my own person. Yeah, man, there's definitely, you know, we were very, religious growing up. So, there's just like, I feel like my outlook on things are a lot, like my mom is black, my dad is white. So, you know, I grew up part-time in Maryland, which is up north. And then I spent some time, you know, now I live in the South. So, I've just been very fortunate to kind of like see a lot of different perspectives on a lot of things that I do think gives me a different outlook on life than a lot of people.
Yeah. And how did it make you who you are right now?
Well, it definitely, my parents didn't ever foster an environment of entitlement. You know what I'm saying? If you wanted something, like if you wanted some fast food, like you needed, I know you've heard the joke, you know, can we get McDonald's? Do you have McDonald's money? Like, you know, stuff like that. You know, if we wanted a new toy, we had to buy a new toy. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times like Christmas and, you know, our birthdays were like the times we'd get new toys or money and whatnot. So, you know, there's like no entitlement. My dad was a super hard worker, you know, having to provide for, you know, a big family. And you know, he just instilled in me, you know, if you want something, you got to go out and get it, you know, never look at another man and let that person outwork you. You know what I'm saying? Like for him, work could get personal sometimes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's carried over sometimes, like when I'm in training, if I'm like doing something and the person next to me is going harder, then it's like, okay, well, I have to go harder. I can't just sit down and like let this person go faster than me. So, you know, there's a lot of times where like training definitely gets more intense than it should, but I think that's helped me get to where I am at this point.
Yeah. So you were homeschooled. What about high school? Homeschooled through high school and everything?
Through high school. Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Like that must have been very, very unique. Did at that point when you're a teenager, you must know kind of what the outside world is like a little bit, right?
Well, and you know, credit to my parents. We were homeschooled, but my parents always had us in a lot of activities. So we were never really too socially inept. Like, you know, we played a lot of sports growing up, you know, my sisters did dance, you know. So we were always around regular kids, like neighborhood kids. Yeah. And, you know, not to watch Disney, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I think Disney might be a bit of a false expectation of what real school is like. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I want to go there and, you know, call up with the principal, but you know, but yeah. So I had an idea of what the outside world was like.
Now why did they settle on homeschool being their choice?
Well, my mom she didn't like what the school systems were like where we were. I take that back. Initially, I think my older sister and me, we went to school. I think she was in first grade and I was like in kindergarten or whatnot. And I think, you know, I'm sure if my mom told you the story, it would be totally different. But gist of it is like she didn't like how things were going. You know what I'm saying? She thought, you know, we would do better in a home environment, that she could do better. And I think that's how it started. And it just kind of stuck like that, you know? My mom always liked to keep us really close to the chest, because I think she was afraid of like outside influences, like, you know, taking our minds different places that she didn't really want them going. So I think that was probably the primary thing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't say it from a judgmental perspective, because obviously the American educational system leaves certain things to be desired, especially depending on where you are. And then, you know, like for you, like, and from what I learned from you on The Ultimate Fighter, it probably helped mold you into being an individual person. I think, you know, like I've heard perspectives of, I'm so thankful I got homeschooled because I didn't get into the groupthink and this is cool, so I'm going to do this, and this is not cool, so I'm going to worry about this. And you're allowed to really fully develop into your own person, which is like something that I think you were known for on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it for me, it was, you know, it's like you can't compromise who you are, because, you know, as a homeschooler, you spend most of the time by yourself anyway. So if you don't like who you are, you know, you're going to be pretty miserable being homeschooled, you know? And yeah, being on the show, that was definitely because, I just care less about what other people think of me. Like, I can't say I don't care at all. Like, everyone cares. But for me, you know, the goal takes precedent. You know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm trying to achieve takes precedent over, you know, how people view me. You know what I'm saying? So if I have to go super low and into the mud to get what I want done, and come out looking dirty, like, I don't care. You know what I'm saying? As long as I get what I want done.
Yeah. Well, it worked out for you.
Hell yeah.
And on you go. So now homeschooled through high school though, any college?
I went to community college.
What was the plan when you start becoming a teenager and you get to that age of my next step is going to come soon, and it's not just homeschool forever?
Well, in high school, I was a pretty big football player. Like, I was really, really good at football.
How did you play? Oh, did you play like an outside club or something? Did you play at a high school?
It was, the team I played for, it was a team. It was like a club. Like, we played other high schools in the area. We could only play private schools and public schools out of state because of in-state laws and whatnot. But idea was that it would be a team for either charter schools that didn't have a football team or homeschoolers that didn't have a team to play for. What it ended up, when I played, I was like one of like three homeschoolers on the team, because most of the guys were either fifth year seniors or there were guys who were academically ineligible at their school. So they're trying to, you know, still have a year of football. So
yeah.
I mean, it had all the athletes, but it had also had all the craziness that comes with, you know, guys who are academically ineligible and, you know,
make it to college. Bill Burr talks about it like summer school, like, you know, like you're getting a certain type of person in summer school, you know, it teaches you a different avenue of life a little bit.
Absolutely, man. And that, once again, being a homeschooler and, you know, coming out and being around, you know, all the characters, you know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
It was definitely something I think helped towards my perspective of the world and whatnot.
Yeah.
But no, I was going to, the plan was to play college football until I was in about 11th grade. And I just got burnt out on it. You know what I'm saying? Cause I was just waking up football, you know, during the day, I was thinking about football, going to sleep, you know, playing, you know, when I was in eighth grade, I played on two football teams at the same time. You know what I mean? So I'd go to one practice, I just go right to another practice. So, yeah, by 11th grade, I told my dad I didn't want to play football in college. And that was a weird conversation, but I mean, you know, it ended up working out in the end. It only took about 10 years to
find your next thing. Yeah. But did you, and now it's coming back to me that you played football. Did you get like, you kind of lost your way though? Did you get really overweight? Is that part of your story?
It wasn't more of like I lost my way. It was more like I just didn't have any sports to play anymore. So I was just kind of, so yeah, I guess you could say I lost my way. I was just kind of, especially because I was going to get my degree in religious studies. And, you know, just stuff in life started happening and I kind of did lose my direction for a little bit. And I was, I picked up longboarding, you know what I'm saying? I was
cruising, man. I'll cruise a longboard every once in a while.
Yeah, man, we need to go.
What do you mean when you say life started happening? Anything in there?
Well, I think it was kind of, you know, you leave the secure, safe setting of, you know, homeschool and like now, you know, there's all, you know, college is like a really big rush of like ideas coming at you, you know, different things people are trying to throw you away. And it was a really big, like, you know, I learned a lot of things fast, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. People are trying to throw what your way? Like drugs?
I mean, maybe, who knows?
I'm not judging. I'm just saying, you know, like you're out in the world, you know?
No, but now, I mean, that is a thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you know, I'm the only person that it's weird to for the most part. Cause I'm like, I mean, what do you mean you want to skip class and go,
you know? Yeah.
Like what? That's not what they did in the fucking movies, you know, or at least, you know, fucking on Nickelodeon.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't anything too crazy. Like I was just, you know, just going to class, doing my work, you know, going to a job, you know what I'm saying? Just living, you know, the average lifestyle of someone who went to community college, you know what I mean? And then when I was at community college, that's when I started training MMA, right before I got my associate's degree. That's why I still don't have my associate's degree because once I was like, I can't focus in class anymore. Like every time I was at class, I was like, I could be at the gym getting better right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a day in, I was already tired of getting my ass kicked all the time. So I was like, I need to try to get better so I don't get my ass kicked.
Why did you walk in for day one of martial arts?
It was a bucket list thing. I became a fan in high school, you know, just watching and, you know, playing the video games and looking up videos on YouTube to like, you know, fight my buddies in the backyard or whatever. And it was always just something where, you know, to me, what got me into the sport is the same thing that keeps me in the sport. Is the competitive, the, like, it's like the pure competitive aspect of it where there's almost no gear. You don't have anyone to rely on. It's you versus another person. And, you know, the better man comes out, you know what I'm saying? Whether you were getting your ass whooped the whole time and you threw up a submission in the third round, or, you know, whether you knock someone out in the first minute, you can't say anything when someone beats you in a fight, you know what I'm saying? Especially when everyone's watching, everything's on the line. And I was always like, I need to test myself like that. You know what I'm saying? Like I grew up watching a lot of anime and stuff. So it was almost spiritual to me. So I went into the gym and, the very first time I went into the gym, I was really excited. I told everyone, I was like, are you guys going to come watch my first fight? You know, this is actually like my first trial class. I didn't even make it through without almost having to throw up. And then I crashed my car the next day. So I had to wait like another half before I could actually start training. But then, yeah, once I started training consistently, it just kind of just took over. You know what I'm saying? It just felt right. So I haven't looked back since.
Man. So you're telling people on your first day, like, come in for the free class. Who's going to come see me fight? You were saying that?
It was the next day at work.
Okay. Now, in your head, are you being serious or are you being a joker?
There was no jokes at all. I was being 100% serious. I knew before I went in there that I was going to fight at least one time. And my goal was to just keep on going until I lost. But the problem is I lost my first fight. So I was like, damn, I can't go out like that.
Yeah.
But, I did. No, I was 100% serious. And everyone knew I was 100% serious too, because I knew I was just crazy like that. You know what I mean?
Right. So how long did it take you to get to that first amateur fight after you started training? And like, what did you expect it to be like once you started training consistently and kind of chasing it down a little bit?
Well, in all honesty, I was like, in my head, I was like, yeah, I'll probably need like 4 months of training and then I'll be able to go in and fight. And fortunately, the gym I went to first, they were like, because that's when they're like, hey, are you here for as a hobby? Are you here to get in shape? You know, I was like, I want to fight. And they're like, really? You want to fight? You know what I'm saying? You know, gym owners, I hear that all the time. They're like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm like, and I asked, I was like, how long does it generally take someone to get ready? Who has no experience. And the person working the desk at the time told me the fastest someone had ever gone from not having any experience to having an amateur fight with our gym was 8 months. So that was my goal. I was like, all right, I want to be the fastest person. I didn't do it in 8 months, but after a year of training, I had my first amateur
fight. Okay. Yeah. And you wanted that first amateur fight and you thought you'd do a few amateur fights and that's that. I mean, just win a few fights, whatever. And then.
Yeah, it was really like, I mean, because in your head, you know, you never really see yourself losing. So I was like, man, if I just keep going until I lose, I could end up in the UFC. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it was possible. So I had no real end in plan, you know what I'm saying? And then, yeah, I had the first amateur fight and I lost by a bad, bad head kick knockout. Like, it got reposted by Dan Henderson afterwards.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was bad. And yeah, I was just like, once again, the competitive nature of me was like, I was like, man, I can't go out like that. You know what I'm saying? I can't let my lasting image of my favorite sport and me participating in it be me getting viciously knocked out with a head kick. So, and so then I won my next 8 amateur fights. And so after that, by that point, after you're 9 fights deep into an amateur career and you're doing pretty well, you're like, okay, this is definitely what I'm doing now. You know what I'm saying?
What did you learn from the first amateur fight and losing, and kind of how old were you at the time?
I was 22 or 23.
All right. So like early 20s.
Yeah.
Like if I put myself in those shoes, you think of these bucket list items on your life to-do list and you don't really put much thought into what's after it. Right. So if you asked me, I would have said, I want to anchor SportsCenter. And if I do it one time, then I can retire. But what happens when you make it to ESPN and then you just go, well, what now, man? What am I just going to die now? I'm young.
Yeah.
And I imagine to learn that at 22, 23 in your first fight is so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. Cause after that fight, me and my dad, we went to Waffle House and he was like, hey, you know, this happens another 2 times. You're going to have to find something else to do. And I was like, fuck. I was like, yeah. I know. You know, it was
But at the same time, like whether you won or whether you lost, you're not just going to give up on what you like you just said, your favorite sport, what you love to do.
Yeah.
Now, whether you're going to be a fighter or not, it's not like you're never going to walk into the gym and continue to do that. And you learn at 22, 23, like this is a life passion of mine that I'm going to chase down.
Yeah. No, it was. what's really crazy is, you know, I know that not everyone can do necessarily anything they put their mind to, you know what I'm saying? Like physical limitations, you know, being put into consideration or whatnot. But, you know, it's really crazy what you can do. Like if you just like show up and you just keep on working at something every day, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's like, I think that's how you get someone like Ciryl Gane, you know, who doesn't have a whole ton of experience and is fighting for that. Or Francis Ngannou, you know what I mean? It's just like people who show up, like commit to something and just like, just continue to show up and get better. You know what I mean? Continuously growing, getting better. And I think that's what my mindset was like, if I continue to show up, I continue to like practice and work and, you know, get better at all these things that I'm not good at, then, you know, I don't see why I wouldn't be able to fight against these guys who are good at the same thing. You know, I just knew it was a matter of time. And if I could make it to that point, you know what I mean? So that like a race to see if I could get there before, you know, it became too heavy a burden to bear, you know?
Yeah. What point did you think like UFC is in my sights? Like my career won't be complete until I'm in the UFC.
It was when I was still an amateur, once I started winning a bunch of amateur fights, and I really felt like, even as an amateur, like, cause when I was fighting amateur, I fought really good guys, you know what
I'm saying? Like, I was looking, your amateur record to me is more impressive than your pro record so far. I mean, you had those fights on the Ultimate Fighter, which are good, but like Impa Kasanganai and Cody Brundage. And I'm like, well, I know more of your amateur wins than your pro wins. You know?
Yeah. And there's like people on there that you haven't heard of yet that you will soon, like Billy Elekana.
Mm-hmm.
Tough, super fucking tough, you know, Don Terry Woods, you know? And so my confidence, like towards the tail end of my amateur career going into my pros, like was through the roof. That's like one of the things, like going into the show, people were like, well, you know, you haven't been doing this so long. Are you just, you know, like trying to experiment? I was like, no, man, I feel ready to go right now, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, even as an amateur, I was like, okay, the big show is where I got to get to, you know what I'm saying? And barring some kind of injury that would have prevented me from getting to the UFC, I can't see it any way I would have, well, at least at the time, I didn't really see any way I would have stopped until I got to the UFC.
Yeah. And so the Ultimate Fighter, what was it like to have that be your avenue to the UFC instead of just, you know, you win your fights, okay, short notice signing, or Contender Series is obviously a possibility now, but then that's a quite a different animal, the 6 weeks away, all that sort of stuff. What did you think of that?
Man, that was a wild experience from like beginning to end. Like, even like the casting, because it wasn't normal casting that they did because of COVID. Like,
yeah.
And so I've always been very confident that if I can get somewhere and I can like talk to someone in person and like actually show them my skills, then I was like, all right, if there's tryouts, I'm getting on this show. You know what I'm saying? There's no way I'm not getting on this tryouts. And then they're like, there's no tryouts. I was like,
wow, right. I didn't even know that there was no tryouts.
There was no tryouts because I think too many people were testing positive for COVID. So eventually, you know, they just flew us, a bunch of us, out to Vegas. And even in Vegas, we still don't know if at the end of the week we're getting sent home.
Palace Station, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was wild. It was. And then.
So what did they base it on?
I think they were just like, from talking to us and looking
interviews,
at past fights. I think that's what they were going on. And I had just like been, my last couple pro fights had been like pretty entertaining. So I was kind of counting on that, and they were all finishes. So I was counting on that to kind of, you know, if someone had a more impressive, because 5-1 isn't a super impressive resume. You know what I'm saying? We're being like honest, like it's, you know, there's a lot of guys with a 5-1 record, and I was counting on the entertainment value in those fights to kind of bump me above people with more qualified resumes. So, and yeah, I think just me, like just telling a lot of the producers over, I was like, come on, man, just let me on the show. I'll take care of the rest. Let me on the show. because I was a fringe person. They told me that afterwards that I was a fringe guy, and they kind of, I was last second kind of put in. So, yeah.
When did they tell you that?
That I was a fringe guy.
Yeah.
That was after the show was over. And they're like, hey man, you know, good job. You did awesome. You know, you almost weren't on the show. So, you know,
right.
Yeah. So yeah, being on the show, it was just a really cool experience. Like, I missed my family and whatnot. I missed them big time. I missed my home gym big time, but you know that it's like a power 5 weeks in the house. You know what I'm saying? It's like five hard weeks, you know, train with the best prospects in the country, some of the best fighters in the world, some of the best coaches in the world. And just take what you can from that 5 weeks and then go back home, you know? It was awesome. Ultimate Fighter was.
Right away, they're picking teams. Mm-hmm. You get picked last.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that?
I was so pissed, man. I was like, you know, in the show, you know, I throw up a little like hang loose and I'm smiling. But as soon as they gave me my jersey, I sat there with my arms crossed with like a scowl on my face the entire time. And like when we were on the show the whole time, guys were like, oh yeah, it doesn't really matter where you get picked, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, it fucking matters. And like, I was viewed as either, you know, the person, because who knows, Team Ortega might not have even taken me second to last. If Team Ortega had the first pick, I might have just been the flat out last pick. And throughout the show, you know, anytime Ortega was talking, you could hear that he still didn't believe I was shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever I was getting ready before one of his guys or after I beat one of his guys, he was like, yeah, you know, he won, but he's not that good. I'm really surprised these guys lost to him. So, no, I didn't like it. But I love bull board material. Like anytime you can get a little extra motivation, I'm going to take that any day. So, yeah.
How much did you carry it with you through the whole time that you were there?
It's one of those things where I would have won regardless. Right. Like I still would have won the show. It just made it so much sweeter. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause the mission was the same regardless. Like the mission never changed to prove everyone wrong. The mission was, before I even got there, was to win the show and get back home to my family and my wife, soon to be son. But, you know, being picked last and, you know, having the ability to, you know, almost like a little side quest just to, you know, flex on everybody and rub it in. It was awesome. I definitely reminded everybody that I was the last
pick.
The castmates, the producers, anytime there was a camera in my face, I was like, I was the last pick.
Yeah.
First pick, you know. But yeah, no, I still care today.
I mean, it's good to not hold on to resentment, obviously, like holding on to any resentment, stress, whatever, that is physiologically bad. But to acknowledge the story that it is helps boost you even higher. I mean, if I'm you, I'm saying last pick on The Ultimate Fighter every time a camera's still in your face anyways, because people are looking for that.
Yeah.
They want to be that themselves, you know? You know, if you're the third pick, well, big deal. You're another one of the picks, whatever. But if you're the last pick, there's only a few of you, you know?
And that's something that people can resonate with. Cause it's like, everyone's probably been a last pick at some point when they didn't want to be the last pick. So, I think that's a good word right there. I might have to just keep on throwing it out there, being like, just remember.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's right. So when you come to your, you know, real UFC debut, The Ultimate Fighter finale on the fight night or whatever, like, what did you take from that? What do you remember most about that, being in the show? You know, that you just went through the reality show, but now you're in the UFC.
Yeah, man. It was really cool because it's one of those things where, you know, on the outside looking in, you would never know all the behind the scenes stuff. You know, I've had, you know, my fair share of fights, but the whole behind the scenes of a UFC event is just different from, you know, the fight week leading up through, you know, the weigh-ins, you know, all the way up to the fight itself. You know what I'm saying? He's like sharing locker rooms with, like, you know, people I've seen fight on TV before, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
You know, after the weigh-ins, you know, I'm used to having to do my own, you know, bro science rehydration regimen, and, you know, piece of paper they had, you know, based on how much weight I had cut over the week. Cause they had kept on asking me, I didn't realize this is why they were asking how much weight I was losing.
Yeah.
They had all this stuff for me to rehydrate with and all the science behind it. And, you know, even like, you know, the fighter bubble, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just so surreal. Like, it's a different world. I don't think I could live out in Vegas cause my head would get too big. You know what I'm saying? But no, it was awesome. And it was really cool. Cause like I said, like, that was always where I saw myself. So actually being there, you know, it was awesome. And, I definitely want to be a lot cooler this time around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. fanboy a little bit.
My coaches and stuff. I don't think I ever fanboyed over anybody, but there's definitely times where we look back and we're like, God, we were such fucking noobs. You know, what do you do when you're in the fighter bubble? You know what I'm saying?
You don't know. You don't know. You know, the only way to do it is to, and fighter bubbles are not a normal thing. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not usually that way. And hopefully it's not going to be that way for too much longer, but you know.
That's true. Yeah. You know, it's almost, if my whole UFC journey has been like inside of COVID. So it's almost like, procedures are like normal to me. Like, you know, my dad still hasn't seen me fight live. You know what I'm saying?
Right, inside of like,
so, yeah, I can't wait till all the COVID comes down and, you know, we can get back to normal life.
You know, it's crazy. I was thinking about this recently is, I started calling UFC events late 2017, like the last, you know, December of 2017. So really from, you know, beginning of 2018 to the beginning of 2020, when COVID started, it was like 2 years, and I'm like getting ready to almost, you know, another 4 or 5 months go by, I'll have called like more COVID era events than pre, you know what I mean? And it seemed like it was such my world for a long time. And it was like 2 years and now we're almost at 2 years. And I'm just like, gosh, can we be done soon? I hope.
Man, dude, that's wild.
And I feel bad. I feel bad. You know, whatever, I'm not fighting. But I feel bad for you guys. Like there's fight, like Brian Kelleher just fought for the fifth time in the Apex. You know, Billy Quarantillo fought like 4 or 5 times in the Apex. You obviously fought, the Ultimate Fighter is going to be quiet no matter what, the way that they do the show, but you fought in the Apex, here you are fighting. I'm hoping you can fight, you know, in Charlotte or Raleigh or, you know, whatever, something on a fight night somewhere where you can get some pop, you know?
I could not imagine, because it's been so long. I haven't fought in North Carolina at all since third pro fight, like every other, because of COVID and because of some weird boxing commission stuff in North Carolina, which they need to fix. Like, you know, I was having to go to like travel halfway across the country for like $300 to fight, you know,
right.
In Kentucky, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Oh man, no, to fight in Charlotte, I couldn't imagine it right now, man. The support here. Oh man. That'd be an emotional experience more likely than not.
Yeah, man. So now that you're in and you battle through all the junk, what are you trying to be now, Brian?
Man, the goal is to be a UFC champion. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's really nothing. You know, I know, like, in this era, like, everyone, you know, it's all about the money and, you know, getting the money and getting out, you know, kind of the precedent that Conor set. But, you know, I'm old school, man. I'm like a purist of the sport, man. I just want to get really, really good and beat some of the best guys in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Here for the love of the game, you know, all the other stuff that comes with it, that's gravy. It helps me put more into it, but yeah, man, I want to be a world champion. So, that just means I have to keep on just showing up to the gym every day and getting better and better until I'm the champ, you know?
There you go, man. Some also, I want to say this about The Ultimate Fighter. Not me. Some will say you didn't beat the guy in the finale. You beat the other guy. You beat the replacement. But you're getting, you're fighting Trayshawn coming up.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, man, Trayshawn, I've said so much. I feel like I've talked more about Trayshawn than I have on anyone. Just because, you know, there's been, you know, even before the show, there was a couple times where we almost got matched up on the regional scene. And, you know, then we spent 5 weeks together inside of a house. And then, you know, we're supposed to fight each other in the finale. And, you know, when people say that, it's something I don't really, once again, you know, my goal and objective is to win the fight. Like, all the other stuff surrounding it is either, you know, gravy and whatnot. It will be gravy this time after I beat Trey, because people thought that, you know, he would smoke me. A lot of people think he'll still knock me out. So after I beat him, that'll be very sweet. But yeah, this fight is just another fight, you know. I've gotten a lot better since the finale. You know what I'm saying? Not like since the finale, I've gotten dramatically better. You know, physically, you know, I'm faster. My skills are sharper. My fight IQ is higher. You know what I'm saying? My hair is more luscious than it's ever been. You know what I'm saying? In a great place. And I'm ready to execute on Trayshawn. And, you know, if he gets hurt again, you know, throw someone else in there, man. I'm ready to go. You know what I'm saying?
I think your hair might have been one of the reasons why you got on the show. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. No, I don't. If I was bald, I think my chances would have had it taken a hit. You know what I'm saying? And I made sure my hair was like a fro every time I was on camera and everything. Yeah. Like, it was all shit. But yeah.
Can you, just one more thing, I think, here. Can you speak on, you seem to be somebody, you've certainly proven a lot of people wrong, but you don't seem like that's your goal. It seems like that's a side effect and it's not important to you. And I think that probably helps you in proving those people wrong. Is that accurate?
Well, always in my head, I love like the haters, right? Like the haters, they're the people when I'm working out and, you know, I'm tired. Like, I think about all the haters. Yeah.
Yeah.
But important to me, because there's so many haters and, you know, they come and go, are the people who really believed in me. You know what I'm saying? Like, not people who said that they were fans, but people in my own personal life who have sacrificed, because they genuinely believed that I could get to this place. And, without them, I don't know if I could have made it. Those people are the people that drives me way more than in proving anybody wrong. It's proving those people right. You know what I'm saying? So proving people wrong is always a very great side dish, but achieving the objective and proving my people right will always be top priority.
Yeah, man. That's well said. How's the family?
Dude, the family's good, man. Family's good. You know, the holidays are crazy. It just, we had a big snow day. It doesn't snow in North Carolina. So when it snows,
I lived in the Charlotte area for like 3 years before moving back out to Vegas. So I know, man, yeah. you get 2 inches and it's gone by 4 PM, but the city shuts down first.
Done. Everything's done. You know, we just, the sun came out this morning. So
there you go.
But yeah, everyone's good. The baby's healthy. He's about 15 pounds now.
Hey.
Yeah, I mean, big, thick boy. You know what I mean?
What's baby's name?
Miles. Baby Miles.
Miles Battle. There we go, man. Well, congratulations. I think that was another thing on the show, when obviously leaving your families behind, it's always a theme and it's very, very tough. But to leave your pregnant wife and kind of achieve your dreams for the betterment of your growing family was such a unique part of the story, you know, inspirational part of the story, memorable part of the story. And it's cool that you got back home. Miles is part of your life now. And now you can be a UFC dad.
Man, I'll tell you what, I don't, and you know, tell me if you've gotten more emotional the older you get too. Like, I used to like cry. But then I cried on the show and that was annoying. But then when I got home, and cause it took forever, you know, like the we were on the show for 5 weeks, but then the show aired over 12 weeks.
You know what I'm saying?
And so by the time they finally got to that episode where I cried, it had been so long, I'd almost forgot. And then watching that episode and, you know, remembering what it felt like in that moment, and how passionate I was about winning the show for them. I watched it by myself before I watched it with other people. And it's a good thing, cause I was crying.
Yeah. Like a baby.
All the emotions that I forgot about just came like flooding right back to me. And it was, it was definitely, you know, the Ultimate Fighter would have been great regardless, but you know, going on there and doing the damn thing definitely makes it something I can look back and be proud of. And, you know,
yeah.
Show Miles one day, you know, show him what.
Well, so, you know, maturity and growing older will bring out emotions more. So will these good things in life that only happen the further you go, having a baby, achieving something that was at once a dream, and then it's all of a sudden your life, you know, don't be ashamed of it. I tell you what, I'm fighting back tears when I'm watching Brandon Moreno's like feature that they dropped on Twitter about what his victory meant for Mexico. You know, it's like when things move you, it's good. It's okay. Yeah. Means you're alive. Means you care about stuff. Yeah, means you have a passion. So never hide that back, Brian. You'll get more fans because of it.
All right. Heard that.
Hey, brother. Brian, when are you fighting again? Fifth?
The fifth. Yes, sir.
I'm on the call, Brian. I'll see you on fight week. I cannot wait. Brian Battle, Trayshawn Gore. I appreciate you taking the time, man, and diving deep on your life like this. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, man. This has been one of the most unique interviews I've done up to this point. So, you know,
that's what my show's about, Brian. That's what it's all about, brother. Thank you for telling me that. All the best, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
Brian Battle on Fitz Nation. I love nothing more than when fighters at the end of the interview kind of say, hey, thanks for having me on. That was a very different interview. It was very unique and I enjoyed it. And I'm glad Brian Battle had that experience. James Krause told me that. Nobody asked these questions. That's what he said to me. And that is the type of show that I want to do here on Fitz Nation. And I hope that you as a UFC fan find it unique and offers a different perspective. And also, I hope, obviously, that you can take something from it yourself, something from these fighters, these athletes' journeys that makes them better and achieve at a high level. And I hope that you can achieve at a high level in whatever you want to do in life. That'll do it for this show. As mentioned, Brian Battle, Trayshawn Gore is coming up February 5th. Right now, he's an underdog, but just a small one. I just checked. He's like plus 110, plus 120. So the doubters are getting fewer as Brian Battle wins more. And we'll see if he can do that over Trayshawn Gore coming up next month in a couple of weeks. Hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoy the fights this weekend. The UFC is back in a big way in 2022. Thrilled to be a part of it. And until next time on Fitz Nation, I'm Brendan Fitzgerald. Take care of yourself. Have a good one.